Sid Smith.
Morning, Your Honors.
Morning.
May it please the Court, Brad Barshas on behalf of Mr. Smith, who was the respondent in the initial case and the appellate here today. Your Honor.
Do you wish to reserve any time?
I do. I wish to reserve 2 minutes. My apologies. Your Honor, the right to be heard at a meaningful time and in a meaningful manner was at the time that the criminal case concluded in this matter. At any other time prior to that, Mr. Smith is put in a position in which he has to make a decision to either give up a constitutional Fifth Amendment right to self-incrimination while there's a pending criminal matter based on the same facts and circumstances, or give up his due process right to address that civil protection order and defend against it in a meaningful time and in a meaningful manner. Now, that criminal...
You mean to defend against it with his testimony? Certainly you don't mean he can't simply defend against it with other evidence.
Well, Your Honor, in these types of cases, in domestic violence cases, oftentimes it's a he said, she said type of case. And oftentimes there's no other people that witness this information. So to get declarations from other people outside and present evidence that way, other than to simply deny the allegations.
Well, there's often circumstantial evidence. For example, somebody filed a dissolution proceeding 3 weeks earlier and they lost the motion for possession of the family home.
And, Your Honor, in certain cases, that is...
And isn't that why a balancing test like Olympic Pipeline really is necessary rather than just a black letter rule?
And I would agree that a balancing test is appropriate, but I think the way that...
So you're telling us then that the trial court in this case abused its discretion in the balancing?
I would, Your Honor. And
okay. Why don't you focus on what it is that the court got wrong in balancing rather than giving us some sweeping declarations about due process?
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that they got wrong the fact that the criminal case pending and the Fifth Amendment right did not outweigh the prejudice that there was to the petitioner in coming back to court.
What prejudice did your client suffer?
My client now has a protection order against him that impedes his ability to see his children.
Well, that's true of everybody who gets a protection order. What was unfair about the balancing? What?
He was unable to present a defense based on the same facts and allegations. Had he been able to present a defense, it may have come out with a much similar result as the criminal case, which just concluded on Friday, and he was found not guilty on all counts. And so his inability to present a defense at the time in which he was facing life in prison did weigh heavily on his ability to defend against the allegations, which he maintained were not accurate allegations. And so he was not able to give statements to the court about those allegations based on his protection of his rights in the criminal case. And so when the court weighed the petitioner's having to come back to court and sees that as outweighing his...
Well, it wasn't just coming back to court. This thing had dragged on for about 3 years at that point.
The criminal case, the petition had not.
The criminal case had been going on for 3 years.
About 2 years at that time, Your Honor. At this point, it has been about 3 years as it is a 2014 case.
From when I read your briefing.
Understood. But the petition, I think, is what we need to look at. And the date in which she petitioned the court was in March, I believe, of 2016. And so when we look at that, there hadn't been as extensive of a delay. There was only about an eight-month delay. At that point.
How many times did she come back to court for renewal of temporary orders at that time?
I believe there was approximately four times, and I'd have to look back at the exact number of times, but several of those continuances were agreed. She was sick one time and did not want to proceed. And so several of those instances were agreed continuances based on my client's interest and her interest of not wanting to go forward at that time. And so it wasn't until the petitioner got counsel, it was objected to, there was one final continuance granted, and we were not able to continue that case any further unless my client did not waive his speedy trial right and was going forward in the criminal case. Had he waived his speedy trial right, then the court was going to force him to either remain silent and not have an effectuated defense to the protection order, or remain silent and protect his Fifth Amendment right. And I think that's where the Hobson's choice comes in, Your Honor.
I'm a little confused. The speedy trial right on the criminal case had what effect on the domestic violence case? The judge hearing the domestic violence case said either you maintain your right to a speedy trial so we get this thing over, or I'm going to enter the order?
Correct. Or you can present a defense in the protection order case and waive your Fifth Amendment right. So if my client decided to waive his speedy trial right based on the ongoing issues in the criminal case, then the court was no longer willing to continue the civil matter and force my client to either go forward or to remain silent.
So you're requesting a blanket rule. Basically, as long as the criminal charges are pending, there should be the protection hearing should be continued for whatever period of time it is.
I would argue if there is an ongoing criminal case, yes. In King, there was not.
So there's no weighing, no balancing of any harm that or prejudice that might accrue to the person seeking the protection order. It's just simply, as long as you can keep your criminal case going, you don't get a protection order.
Well, I would argue that they do get a protection order. They get a temporary protection
it's
order.
It's different, though, isn't it?
I would say there's very minimal differences.
No ability to control firearm possession with a temporary order, is there?
No.
That's pretty significant in some cases, isn't it?
I would argue, yes, it is. However, I would say that...
Are you telling us, then, that you don't think Olympic Pipeline should be applied in the context of a domestic violence case, even on the state Supreme Court says it can be applied simply in a money damages lawsuit?
I do believe it should be applied in some respects when
but
they're
not asking for a black letter rule.
Well, Olympic Pipeline, there was not a criminal case that had taken effect yet.
There was one coming.
Possibly.
Well, it looked pretty much like there was one coming.
Correct.
The U.S. Attorney's Office was even poking around in it. That's usually a pretty good indicator. And there, all they were looking for was some civil relief, not to try and protect anybody's life in the immediate future. So one would think that perhaps in Olympic Pipeline, the interests were less compelling than they are in a domestic violence case.
However, I would argue that my client's is also more compelling than Olympic Pipeline because he was already set for trial, and he had those rights already intact. The Fifth Amendment needed to be protected because he was already set for trial and going to have to go forward with that trial to defend his innocence, which he was facing life in prison.
Had been willing to go to trial right at that point in time, the court was willing to continue the domestic violence case. It was only unwilling to do so when the trial would be postponed again. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, but there was prosecutorial misconduct that was also brought here before this court in which that delayed the proceeding.
Yep.
May it please the court, my name is William Braun. I represent Sandra Smith. The first issue I want to address is whether or not there's an abuse of discretion in this case. My client waited 8.5 months for her protection order. She got her protection order on her fifth return to court.
No, she actually had a protection order.
She had a temporary during the 8.5 months.
What was the precipitating event? If the criminal events had occurred sometime well before she petitioned, what was the precipitating event that caused her to file for her petition in 2016 instead of 2015?
Her husband asked her to lie for him in the criminal case, and she reported it to the police. And the same day that he was arrested, March 4th, 2016, she filed for the protection order.
So she was afraid of retribution from that arrest?
Absolutely. What the court did in this case is exactly what Olympic Pipeline recommends. Olympic Pipeline says if resolution of the criminal case is remote, it should not be awaited. And then it says if a brief limited stay produces no clarification in criminal status and other issues have not emerged to alter the balance, the court remains free to lift the stay and proceed. That's exactly what the court did here. It gave Joshua Smith 8.5 months. On September 28th, it warned him, this is your last continuance. You have to choose by the time you come back in 2 months, November 21st, you've got to make a choice.
Sort of meaningful distinction between Olympic Pipeline in this case in that there were no actually filed criminal charges, and there were pending criminal charges here.
No, there were charges here, no question. So under Olympic Pipeline, that one factor settled. There were charges filed. It wasn't an investigation going on by AUSAs.
We could consider the appellant's argument that the Olympic Pipeline shouldn't be applied when there is a case in which charges have actually been filed, and that Olympic Pipeline is really limited to those circumstances where there's a prospect of filing charges.
I don't think so, Your Honor. If you read the factors, one of them is what is the implication of the Fifth Amendment. And when Olympic Pipeline discussed that, they just talked about, well, have charges been filed or not, and is he in real danger of criminal prosecution? Here, the fact, it's just one of eight factors. Has he been charged? Yes, he was charged. But
Firearms an issue in this case?
Pardon?
Were firearms an issue in this case?
Yes, they were. There's a police report that says that he told the 15-year-old victim of the sexual assaults that if she said anything, he was going to get his gun and he was going to kill the family and then kill himself. So, yes, clearly there's a danger of gun violence here.
Did she seek a voluntary surrender of firearms pending the outcome of the protection order proceeding?
If you look at her petition, she checked the box that says, order him to surrender his weapons. Mm-hmm. But she didn't check the box below it that said, give me a temporary gun surrender order. And the commissioner didn't give a temporary gun surrender order.
Did Mr. Smith volunteer to surrender his weapons and stipulate to such an order?
I don't know. As far as I know, that's in the criminal case. There's nothing in the record.
Do you know does the record in this case show whether in the criminal case there was any order as a condition of release that he surrender his weapons?
There's in the clerk's papers, page 7, there's an order, a SAPO, sexual assault protection order, but it's issued as part of the criminal case. And if you look at it, it says he's ordered to surrender weapons, but the court neglected to make the mandatory findings. So I'm not sure if that order would have been enforceable. But there was an order entered on January 3rd, 2015, and it expired January 3rd, 2017. One of the critical points is that Olympic Pipeline applies here. The problem is that when it's briefed to you gentlemen, it's not what they do is they don't make it apply to protection orders, which are so unique. We all know that protection orders have all kinds of special things.
Court?
Pardon?
They is the Supreme Court in your sentence. Who's they? I don't have an antecedent.
All the courts below, commissioners, judges, they and respondents, the alleged abusers. The critical point is that when you apply Olympic Pipeline to protection order cases, not your typical civil case, you end up with a result that's really, really different from what you get under Olympic Pipeline. What this case really needs is an Olympic pipeline decision that applies to victims of domestic violence and domestic violence cases, because they're so different.
What factors aren't on the list that you think need to be?
No, I think the eight factors are fine. But when you apply those eight factors, the prejudice to the victim is just so much worse than it was in an Olympic pipeline. Olympic pipeline said, the prejudice to the plaintiff is lost memories and missing witnesses. Here, it's life or death.
You think we really need to tell somebody that? That isn't already on the plate?
Well, if you look at Commissioner Jeske's decision, not one word about it. Not one word. And that's because she thought that the Fifth Amendment trumped everything. And that's just not right. The Fifth Amendment doesn't trump everything.
Well, the Supreme Court pretty much said that in Olympic Pipeline.
Right.
So, I mean, what is it you think we would need to say, though, that isn't already said in Olympic Pipeline?
Well, Olympic Pipeline, all the analysis is about your typical civil case. And what we need, victims of domestic violence need, they need a decision that take the Olympic Pipeline, the eight factors, and apply them to a protection order case. Because protection order cases, you know, there's no right to discovery. That was a big issue in Olympic Pipeline. You don't have that here. There's no right to cross-examination. That's why there's no Fifth Amendment risk. There's no right to live testimony. The civil rules don't apply, and the rules of evidence don't apply.
Can you ask for live testimony?
Oh, sure. And sometimes it happens.
What happens if the petitioner says, I want live testimony, and then at the hearing says, I want to call, and wants to call the respondent?
That's Rule 43F, calling an adverse witness, and since the civil rules don't apply, you're not going to be able to do that.
Why not?
I can't call.
If he's sitting in the courtroom and I say, I want to call so-and-so, what rule says, and the court's already said it'll hear live testimony, what prevents that from happening?
The Scheib v. Crosby that holds that the civil rules don't apply.
You just told me I could ask the court to allow me to present live testimony, and the court had discretion to do that in the domestic violence hearing.
That's correct.
Okay. The court said it's going to allow me to present live testimony, and I say I want to call a respondent. What's going to stop me from being able to do that at that point?
The fact that you cannot rely on Rule 43F to do that.
But the judge could say, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, and then if that happens, you just have a different balancing. If that happens, then the balance shifts under Olympic Pipeline. You know, the more you change this court just did the Rohrbach decision, and you reversed the trial court because the presiding judge did not take into account new information. And so...
So is whether there's a request for live testimony part of the eight factors?
It is... I think it would be included in the prejudice to the alleged abuser. Because if the court allows live testimony, then the risk to him goes up. If I'm allowed to call the alleged abuser as an adverse witness, yes, then that's going to shift the balance. You asked about whether or not my client agreed to these continuances. And
we didn't ask. Someone told us she did agree to some. We have the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I'd like to address a couple things that counsel just stated. You guys asked about whether a gun was at issue. The police report does allege some information about a gun.
Well, let me be more direct since time is short. We're asked to choose between the Fifth Amendment due process right in a criminal case and the victim's rights to have an order in place. Did your client offer to stipulate to a longer temporary order and surrender weapons, which would have accomplished what was possible under a court-ordered protection order?
It was not asked of my client whether or not we would stipulate to surrender weapons as
so
it was.
You didn't volunteer to do that to avoid the hearing going.
Do you think that was a possibility to avoid the Hobson's choice that you ask us to avoid?
I do not, because the petitioner did not agree to a longer continuance.
I wasn't asking about a continuance. You agreeing to an order longer than a 14-day order. A stipulated continuance pending the outcome of trial, which granted by stipulation the relief that was sought until that date, so it remained temporary, but gave full protection.
Would we have stipulated to that? Yes. Was it something that was thought of or optioned at that time? No.
Thank you.
Would we solve part of this problem by writing an opinion that says one way the defendant could avoid this is to propose the following temporary order that grants the same relief as a permanent domestic violence order?
Correct. I believe that would be...
Would that solve the concern the defense bar would have about these orders?
I believe it would, because there would be no finding made without my client's inability to present a defense. I think allowing a temporary order without finding and a stipulation to be had would alleviate...
A stipulation that all weapons be surrendered and that the respondent not possess any of those weapons unless until the criminal case was resolved.
I believe that that would alleviate the defense bar's concern.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next case.